namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Chose one verse from the first canto, fifth chapter, text number 18. I'll just read the Sanskrit. Tasyaito heto pratiteta kovido na labhyate tayat brahmatam upariyada talabhyate dukhanavam anyasukham kalena sarvatra gambhiram hasa. Translation. This is Narada's instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam. Persons who are actually intelligent and philosophically inclined should endeavor only for that purposeful end which is not attainable even by wandering from the topmost planet Brahmaloka down to the lowest Patalaloka. As far as happiness derived from sense enjoyment is concerned, it can be obtained automatically in due course of time, just as in course of time we obtain miseries even though we do not try for them, or do not desire them. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Every man, everywhere, is trying to obtain the greatest amount of sense enjoyment by various types of endeavors. Some men are busy engaged in trade, industry, economic development, political supremacy, etc. And some of them are engaged in fruitive work to become happy in the next life by attaining higher planets. It is said that on the moon, the inhabitants are fit for greater sense enjoyment by drinking soma ras, and the Pitraloka is obtained by good charitable work. So there are various programs for sense enjoyment either during this life or in the life after death. Some are trying to reach the moon and other planets by some mechanical arrangement, for they are very anxious to get into such planets without doing good work, but it is not to happen. By the law of the Supreme, different places are meant for different grades of living beings according to the work they have performed. By good work only, as prescribed in the scriptures, one can obtain birth in a good family, opulence, good education, and good bodily features. We see also that even in this life, one obtains a good education or money by good work. Similarly, in our next birth, we get such desired positions only by good work. Otherwise, it would not so happen that two persons born in the same place at the same time are seen differently placed according to the previous work. But all such material positions are impermanent. The position in the topmost Brahmaloka and in the lowest Patala are also changeable according to our own work. The philosophically inclined person must not be tempted by such changeable positions. He should try to get into the permanent life of bliss and knowledge where he will not be able to be forced to come again back to this miserable material world, either in this or that planet. Miseries and mixed happiness are two features of material life, and they are obtained in Brahmaloka and other lokas also. They are obtained in the life of the demigods and also in the life of the dogs and the hogs. The miseries of mixed happiness of all living beings are only different degrees in quality, but no one is free from the miseries of birth, death, old age, and disease. Similarly, everyone has his destined happiness also. No one can get more or less of these things simply by one's personal endeavor. Even if they are attained, they can be lost again. One should not, therefore, waste time with these flimsy things. One should only endeavor to go back to Godhead. That should be the mission of everyone's life. Om Agyan Timidandasya Gyana Jana Salakaya. So, this verse is very instructive because it completely overturns the force of material activities. Everyone, everywhere, as Srila Prabhupada points out, is trying to better their situation. That is pretty much what life in the material world is like. Someone is trying to get more of something, more money, more food, more social family arrangements, better family arrangements, better situation somewhere in the material world. People work, spend most of their day struggling, striving to get a better position, even within the local job, or to get some money where they can use that money to fortify their desires for a better lifestyle. This goes on. And this is practically 99.9% of the population of the material world. And the other half, or the other aspect of material life, is one is very keen to avoid things that interfere with their plans or cause them such miseries and sufferings. So if you really analyze material life, it's to somehow or other better one's position and get more so-called happiness by material standards, and somehow or other avoid misery, defeat, suffering. And this is called hard struggle for existence. This is the material world. Why is it a hard struggle? Because no one can do anything to better their situation, as it's explained in this verse here. Sometimes we speak of happiness in the material world, or material happiness. But the Shastras and the great Acharyas explain that what goes on as material happiness is just a type of diversion away from the real happiness. It conditions one to think that this is the goal, and therefore one is cheating themselves. Because when one achieves some kind of material success or happiness, they forget about the real goal, or the real happiness, which is Brahma Sokyam. Nayam Deho Deho Nirbhajan Loke Kastan Karma Avate Vidbujan Jay Tapo Divyam Putakasena Savyad Brahma Sokyam Tvanantam. In other words, real happiness is eternal. It's not like material happiness, and it's not based on the senses and contact with the sense objects. That happiness is the happiness or the birthright of all living beings. So material happiness is just a diversion. But there is no such thing as material happiness, because everything is proportional in this world. So therefore, when you actually compare material happiness to what is real happiness, it's another form of suffering. Someone, Prabhupada, was discussing this point in detail. What is material happiness? And one devotee was saying, well, what about the mode of goodness? In the mode of goodness, there's some religiousness, there's some pious activities, you get some knowledge, you get some freedom from material suffering, you maybe even get a good position. You may even be recognized in this world as a good person or a person who's doing good to others. But Prabhupada responded that one of the characteristics, or he actually said the main characteristic of the mode of goodness, is knowledge. And that knowledge tells you there's no happiness here. So, aside from all the other, decorations of the mode of goodness, the real decoration is to have knowledge and understand that that knowledge is going to free you from the illusion of happiness. And this verse is very instructive, especially, now the first, there's two aspects to this verse. The first part is that Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Abrahman Bhuvana Loka Purna Avritir Arjuna, that from the highest planet to this material world, down to the lowest, all are places of misery. Why? Because of birth and death. People accept birth and death as part of life and don't see it so much as, you know, something that is miserable. It is miserable, but they don't count. They count the real miseries as, you know, unfulfilled desires in terms of their desire to enjoy sense gratification. But when one takes birth in this material world, one is given these miseries automatically. Birth is a misery. And we read in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam how the living entity packed up tightly within the womb for 9 months is undergoing so much, what we say, deficiency, so much difficulties, both for the mother and for the child. And it describes it in great detail, as opposed to any other description you'll find anywhere, how that child is being forced, hardly be able to breathe. If the mother eats something wrong, the child also suffers. And then the friends of the living entity in the womb is simply the abominable insects and so many other nice things you meet inside there. So, I mean, if you really think birth is nice, read the fourth canto. I think it's somewhere around the 29th or 30th chapter of the fourth canto. Third canto. No. Is it the third canto? Kapila's instructions, yes. I'm sorry, take that back. Third canto, around the 28th or 29th chapter, somewhere like that. Very detailed descriptions of what the little soul has to undergo for so many months. And then when it comes out, it's in complete ignorance. So birth is described. And then there's old age. You know, old age, there's so many deficiencies. We don't have to go into that. I mean, it might be good for some of us, the young people, to hear about old age. Just to know what you're getting to see in the future. And things don't work as they used to. It's like a car that starts to break down, you know. You can try to keep repairing it and kind of, you know, send it to the doctors for a tune-up, but you know, it's just on its way down, and pretty much soon it runs out of gas and it's finished, you know. No matter, all your tune-ups don't work anymore. So old age is, and there's so many deficiencies. You have four eyes, glasses. You have three legs, a cane. What did you say? I can't hear you. Can you speak louder? Can't hear properly. So it's just on and on. There's so many, how we say, list of deficiencies as the body just breaks down. And some people are suffering so much in old age, they just can't wait for death. It's a fact. And then death just typically takes everything away. So these are the miseries. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Dukalayam Asasratam, that this place is temporary and miserable. So one should not, as the second part of the verse, try to make some, what we say, one who's actually intelligent, the word is intelligent here, that one who has good intelligence and sees or can understand through the words of Scripture. There are different ways to obtain knowledge, but the greatest and most powerful and most effective and most complete way is to hear from those who are experienced in that knowledge and who have realized that knowledge. You can experience something through your own experience or your own, you can understand something through your own experience, but that's second. The best is to learn from those who know. That is real intelligence. So we hear about, you know, how this material world is both temporary and miserable. Temporary means, some people might think, well, that's good. It's temporary because it's so miserable. At least it's temporary. So you know your misery is only temporary, but you just go from one form of misery to another, so it doesn't get any better. It's just like there was one devotee. He wrote a poem comparing the material world as changing seats on the Titanic ship. You know the Titanic is? I'm sure you heard of it. Back in the early 1900s, they had created this boat, huge ocean liner. It was a grand, what we say, invention in the way of progress. And now they wanted to test it out. So it was going from, I think, London or in that area, all the way to America, across the ocean, the first voyage of this huge ocean liner. So everyone, all the important people of the countries came to be on this ocean liner. There were thousands of people on it. And because it was a celebration, and people wanted to be honored. So people got on the, people who had positions, who had power, were on there. And the boat hit an iceberg. Now the people on the bottom, there was different levels. On the top, they didn't even know they hit the iceberg, but the people on the bottom, they realized it first. So the people on the top were still having a party, and the ones on the bottom were just running for their lives. Because, so if you think, well, you know, it might be better to be on the top, so at least you go down a little later. You can party for another 10 minutes. It's like that. So that's material life. You're changing one's position to another position. You're simply changing seats on a sinking ship. That's all. That's just the material world. And to understand the nature, to make progress in the goal of life, to go back home, back to God, one has to be, as the scriptures say, completely convinced that there's no happiness in this world. And Prabhupada said that is a prerequisite for making spiritual progress. One has to have a full understanding that I should not try to increase my material happiness. I simply should try to serve the Lord. And by the Lord's arrangement, the Lord will put me in such a way that I can make progress back home, back to God, and the Lord will give me all protection. The Lord will give me all, whatever I need to live in this material world. So a little endeavor for personal, what we say, security and arrangements should be made, but not as the goal of life, or not as the goal of one's activities. The real goal is to purify the heart. That's why we come to these holy places, to take shelter of the great souls, to hear. The most important process of going to holy places, as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj says, is to hear from those who can speak about the holy places and who can reveal the holy places and who can guide our consciousness on how to approach the holy places. So we can get the maximum amount of benefit from being in these holy places. To be able to see the holy places, we see with our ears. The eyes, as Prabhupada says, the eyes, they have cataracts. We see what the material world is like, the three-dimensional. But spiritual life is on the fifth dimension. There's five dimensions. The material world is the third dimension. The fourth dimension is the subtle material energy. And the fifth dimension is the spiritual energy. So we want to go above that. That comes by hearing regularly. And when the ears open, then the heart can receive that knowledge. And when the heart starts to, what we say, receive that knowledge in a submissive way, then the eyes become purified. Premanjaritam bhakti vilochanena santa sadaiva riddayeju vilo kalyanti yam sama sundar achinta guna sarubam govindam pari purusham tamaham bhajami. So this is the process to hear. So we've come to these holy places. It's one of the nine processes of bhakti. It is called padasevanam, serving the lotus feet. Coming to the holy place is serving the lotus feet of the Lord, because these places are places of the Lord's transcendental pastimes. In that sense, they're non-different than the Lord, and they're non-different than the spiritual world. So, but to enter into these places in a proper consciousness, one has to hear regularly about the glories of these holy places and practice the proper mood in order to approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What is that proper mood? One should be here to, what we say, serve the holy places by taking shelter of the mercy of the Lord, by learning about the Lord, by putting aside all other activities except for basic bodily needs, and forgetting about what happened in wherever you came from. I think His Holiness Madanaranath Maharaj has said practically in every yatra that I can remember, you're here now, forget about Bombay and wherever else you have to, you're coming from. We have entered into what we say another atmosphere, so leave that other atmosphere behind and now be here. And that way we can fully maximize the potential to, what we say, of this yatra as much as possible. So this is spiritual life. And this is actually life. So material existence, or material life as mentioned here, is simply a hard struggle to achieve something you're going to lose anyway. Isn't that wonderful? People work hard for something they're going to lose. Haribol. It's not very enlivening, is it? Okay, we have to temporarily situate ourselves in the material world to live. And that is, therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam mentions very strongly that one should make the minimal amount of arrangements for brahmacharis, no arrangements. For grihasthas, some arrangement is made in order to maintain body. The brahmacharis are completely dependent on the mercy of the Lord and fully engaged in devotional service. The grihasthas have to make some arrangements for family and maintenance, but still focus on the goal of life. So one who actually is intelligent, and it says philosophically inclined. That means, what does it mean to be philosophically inclined? It means to be thoughtful. It's to think in terms of what am I doing, where am I going, what is the goal of life, and how to achieve that goal of life. Philosophically, there are people who know philosophy, but if their philosophy is not a means of purifying their life, then it is just, we might use another word, philosophy. Philosophy of fools. It's like, you know, it's like the man who's sitting on the branch, he's sawing on the inside, and he's just sawing and sawing away, and, you know, somebody comes over and says, hey, you're going to fall if you keep sawing. He says, no, I know what I'm doing, just... And then he saws and he falls on the ground. He gets up, he runs over to the man and says, you're a great philosopher. How did you understand that? And, well, we just see by... Even one who has empiric observation can see the temporary nature of everything in this world. So, therefore, even the best, just like it says here, the highest planet is Brahmaloka. Even Brahma has to leave his position at one point. Brahma's life is long compared to, when we say life on this earth, 311,040,000,000,000 years, the lifetime of Lord Brahma. We can't even calculate what to speak of, you know, understanding this long duration of life. But for Brahma, that's just 100 years, as time is relative according to the level of existence that one is in. So everyone has to leave their situation. And the more nicer the situation is, the more difficult it is to leave. And so therefore those who somehow attain, by material definitions and standards, some position in this world, they experience the most anxiety. Why? Because they have to leave it. The more you have, the more you lose when you lose it. Right? You don't have much, you know, the poor person in the streets who is just living from day to day, his existence is quite pitiable, and so he has really nothing to lose in that sense. But one who has achieved something, that is considered, always say, by material standards, a great loss. So therefore, any place in the material world is considered to be a place of misery. And Krishna explains that. He says that twice in the Gita, at least twice. He says, Dukalayam and Sasratam Anitya Asubham. He says it in the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita also. He says it over and over just to make this point that one should, this verse is really an essential verse, that one should focus on going back home, back to God. In other words, one should focus only on the goal of life. And that is the real, and that is real intelligence. And then here, the second half of the verse, material happiness is in sense enjoyment, it's automatic. Prahlad Maharaj explains, you know, Daivanitrena? When you take birth according to your previous karma. And therefore you're allotted so much happiness and distress by material standards. And one cannot change the amount. So the endeavors to increase happiness and decrease distress is futile because you get what you're destined to get. Of course, people can change how it comes. You can change how you suffer. If you don't like this kind of suffering, you can suffer in another way. Or you don't like enjoyment also may come in different forms. But it comes. Therefore, one cannot change their happiness and distress. It is already allotted. It's already programmed according to one's birth in this material world. And one is performing activities in this material world. And even if they're performing pious activities, which will elevate them to another, better position, that position is also temporary also. And Prabhupada says that actually there are a whole class of demigods who are in higher planets who see the mercy of Lord Chaitanya in this Sankirtan movement, who are taking birth in this movement as the children of our movement. They actually see that here is the place where they can attain the goal of life. Because the more material happiness you have, the more you become intoxicated with that happiness and forget about the goal of life. So you can't increase material happiness, nor can you decrease material suffering. You can just change how it comes. So therefore, Prabhupada constantly throughout this purport says that the miseries, mixed happiness of the living beings, even mixed happiness is another form of misery. So one should seriously take to the process of devotional service. So therefore one has, in order to practice devotional service, Rupa Goswami gives the process. Utsaham nishtayam daryat, tatta karma pavartan. That one has to be enthusiastic and one has to become determined. Determination is the feature of success in one's spiritual practice. I think we mentioned this the other day in one lecture, how without determination the process is so difficult. But to become determined, one has to be free from the tendency of sense gratification, because sense gratification waters down or dilutes one's determination. So if you want to be determined, you have to become free from the process of trying to fulfill material desires. But in order to become free from the process of trying to fulfill material desires, one has to chant the holy names of the Lord. So it takes some determination to stay steady in the process of chanting the holy names of the Lord. So one has to associate with devotees in order to get that enthusiasm and determination to chant the holy names of the Lord, to free us from the desires for sense gratification, which allows determination to develop. And as determination develops, we become fixed in Krishna consciousness, and then we can chant the holy names. So it starts with the holy name, and it goes back to the holy name, the association of Vaishnavas. So this is the process of devotional service. So here, in this very most, we might say, one of the most important holy places throughout the holy land of Bharatvarsya, we have a chance these next 4 days is to absorb our consciousness more and more in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, associating with devotees, and putting our consciousness away from the difficulties that come by way of material. The difficulties are there, and that they're always there, and we just have to tolerate. Okay, so any questions, comments? Do we have a microphone for questions? Yes, there's a question here in the front. Speak nice and loud and nice and slow.
The association of devotees, we act like that, not to do, and we'll get some determination. But when we go out of the association of devotees, the same philosophy doesn't work.
Oh, it works. The question was, the same philosophy of giving up sense gratification doesn't work. It's easy in the association of devotees. That's why we take the association of devotees, because when we do find ourselves in a situation where that association is not there, we should take what we learn from the association of devotees and carry it with you. This yatra especially is a concentrated form of transcendental energy. It's concentrated. So you might find other forms of transcendental energy, which is not as concentrated, or you might find yourself in a situation where there's no transcendental energy. You have to be the source of that. So it's more difficult to be in a situation where you have to work harder for the same thing that comes easier in the association of so many devotees and being in a holy place like that. So one has to see what is required in order not to somehow or other glide down to the material energy again. So therefore the process works. We have to chant the holy names of the Lord. We can receive association from Vaishnavas through reading transcendental scripture. And Prabhupada, when someone asked Srila Prabhupada, how can we associate once you're gone? He said, you read my books. I'm in my books. My books are not different than me. So we can associate with Srila Prabhupada. We can associate with our spiritual master through reading transcendental knowledge. Like that. And we should be careful in the association of materialistic people. This is a common struggle for practically all of us, how to be in the association with material people and not become afflicted or affected by that association. And Prabhupada gives the example that one should not develop affection for materialistic people. We should develop affection for devotees. If your family members are not devotees, how do you cut off that affection? Well, you have to be the association then. Instead of taking their association, you have to give them your association. You have to bring Krishna into their life and not allow them to bring Maya into your life. That's what it means to associate. So that takes some determination, some planning, some practice. Yeah, so the quality of what we gain from our this yatra will be tested when we leave the yatra. Yeah, will be tested just to see how much we actually grew in this association, how much we can carry it over. Just like I travel and preach throughout the year, but I always look forward to coming to Chaupati to be in the association of so many wonderful Vaishnavas in December, January, this part of the year. And it's like a recharging of the batteries. Try to recharge all year, but when you come to this type of atmosphere, so many wonderful Vaishnavas, so many wonderful programs, so many, what we say, examples of what Srila Prabhupada has taught us as what is Krishna consciousness. And then you can absorb that more, and then you take it with you. And don't forget it. So it's a struggle. It's a struggle. But devotees like to fight. We fight amongst ourselves for the wrong thing. Why don't we fight against Maya? Just take that fighting propensity and fight against Maya instead of fighting against our, you know, those things that are not necessary to fight with. But Maya's hard. Maya's a little harder to see. But Maya's everywhere. Maya's inside, Maya's outside. Well, what is Maya? That thing that takes us away from Krishna, that's all. Therefore, the Acharyas, Ranaswami likes to quote this one verse from the Vishnu Puran. What is the greatest anomaly? What is the greatest mistake? What is the greatest misfortune? It's to forget the Supreme Personality of Godhead for one moment. So we should practice what Krishna says in the 18th chapter, 65th verse, always remember me. When you're remembering Krishna, you're with Krishna. And so Prabhupada says you have to think of something. Why not think of Krishna? So practice thinking of Krishna 24 hours a day. It's easy to think of Krishna in these yatras, or it's easier. But it's not like we can be on the yatra all year round. You know? We would like that. But we have other responsibilities, many of us. Referring to me, I was saying about the, what is that, dimension? In the fifth dimension, the scientists also do say about multi-dimensions. Also, Maharaj's opinion about it. It's just a way to describe the spiritual realm, that's all. Above the material energy, this is the third dimension. The fourth dimension is what happens on the subtle plane. On the plane of mind intelligence, like that. Above that is the fifth dimension, or the spiritual dimension. Just like the great souls, the great pure devotees, if they want something to happen, it will happen. And it's already happened on the fifth dimension, and it manifests itself on this dimension in due course of time. So that by their pure devotion, whatever they want will happen is already happening on the spiritual platform. It manifests in form of our eyes in due course of time. And so, just material, spiritual is absolute. If you want, you can explain this in a little more scientific way. I'm sure we have a few scientists here that can, but there are different levels of existence. There is this, like, the holy places are simply on the fifth dimension, but they're covered with the energy of the material energy, or a layer of material energy. The coverings in the holy places of the spiritual energy is less thick than it is in other areas of the world. Because everything is spiritual, ultimately. Krishna says, when you thus learn the truth, you know that all living beings are in me, they are mine. Everything is actually spiritual from the highest platform. So the more you come, the more you perform devotional service and purify your consciousness, the more we realize the spiritual nature of everything. One is seeing Krishna everywhere, and everything is in Krishna. Now, these holy places, there's only a thin layer of material energy. So, therefore, it's easier to cut through, or it's more conducive to cut through, and actually experience. What is that experience? That is a realization of Krishna, or realization of transcendental principles. That is the spiritual nature. It's a realization. It's like when we see the deity, what are we seeing? We're seeing according to the level of our consciousness. The one who sees with pure devotion is seeing Krishna in his form as he appears in the deity, non-different. Any other questions? Okay. In Yatra, we are getting good association of brahmacharis and senior devotees. Well, everyone, you should see everyone as good association, not only brahmacharis. There are many, this idea of that the brahmacharis are the only good association. Everyone, you should, your taking association with devotees is according to how much you're in the mood of service. So, the question goes on, but familiarity breeds contempt, and we may tend to take this association lightly. How do we avoid this? Through being in the proper consciousness of trying to serve, that's all. Make friendship with the devotees and serve the devotees, that's all. Be respectful. Try to cultivate the mood. If we're in the mood of enjoyment, I mean, this is an enjoyable experience, but the enjoyment comes through a method of service. When we hear the lectures, what are we trying to do? We're trying to serve through the process of hearing. When we're going to the holy places, we're trying to experience the Lord by serving the Lord, by being in the proper consciousness to approach the Lord, that's all. So it's a matter of consciousness. So don't try to enjoy, try to serve, that's all. Make friends with the devotees and serve the devotees, that's all, in different ways. Share Krishna consciousness, speak about your experiences, speak about your realizations. These are some things you can practice. What is the importance of saying Jai Radha Madhava, singing Jai Radha Madhava, and Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya before beginning class? Prabhupada said we should do it. So it's important. Is that okay? You have another idea? Jaya Radha Madhava is by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he explains that this song is the perfect description of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's simply enjoying. That's all. This is the perfect description of the spiritual Krishna in the spiritual world. And Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya is the Maha Mantra in the Dwarpa Yuga. And so we Om Namo Vasudeva, Vasudevaya means Vasudev, who is situated everywhere. Krishna is Vasudev, he is situated everywhere. So we offer our respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord, who is situated everywhere. That's the meaning of the mantra, like that. Okay, so someday when you give class, you can do the same. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sometimes we used to say that there are two mantras, one for going to sleep and one for waking up. The mantra for sleeping is Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, because that's the time that everyone just relaxes and starts to feel the happiness of material energy. And the one for waking up is Sarira Avijjajala. So, no one sleeps in, during that mantra. Mind can find fault in everyone, even in great souls. How to calm mind? Is it possible to do it? I mean, when at last I will stop finding fault in others. Well, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, you can get my full mercy by chanting the holy names and not finding fault in others. So to get the full mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is one of the requirements. We get the mercy by chanting the holy names, but to get his full mercy, we have to be a dosha darshi. It means one who doesn't see the faults of others. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the commentaries by the acharyas, it explains there are four types of people who see faults. There's those who are like Daksha. Although Lord Shiva was free from all types of faults, still he found fault. The Dakshas are those who all they see is faults. Even amidst good qualities, they see only faults. Why? Because their minds are full of that type of mentality. They're not happy within themselves, or they're full of expectations, and then they just find faults or see faults. So devotees are not like that. But there's the next one down is those who see faults and good qualities side by side. Now, if you see good qualities and you see faults, you can focus on whatever you choose. So focus on the good qualities. Or when you see faults, look for the good qualities, and you'll find them also. So there are those who see faults and good qualities and reject the faults and focus on the good qualities. A little higher is those who see faults as potential good qualities. A person may have faults, but he sees that person that fault actually is a good quality. Just like a person may be very, I don't know, what's the word? What would be a good example of a fault that could be a potential good quality? Someone becomes angry at something that is worth becoming angry at. So we may say anger is considered to be a negativity. But to be angry in the right way, or one who is angry towards ignorance, or people who are ignorant, once that becomes engaged in devotional service, it can become purified and be a good quality. So there's many. There's faults that are potential good qualities. And then there's the highest, the one who doesn't see any faults, only sees good qualities. So even if we see faults, we should reject them and focus on the good qualities. And what is the good qualities? That everyone who is a devotee is an outstanding good quality. And what is that? They're a devotee. Or at least they're practicing devotional service. Prabhupada said, don't criticize a person who's in the shower. Even if they're in the shower, although they're not fully full, clean yet, they're getting clean. So therefore, even if we see something that is negative, we don't focus on it. We focus on the good qualities. That's a devotee. I think Radhanath Maharaj will probably tell the story of what is a true Vaishnava. It's a story about the Sri Sampradaya. It's a beautiful story. I won't tell it. I'll let Maharaj tell it because he tells it so perfectly. But one of the qualities is like a male hen who's like a cock. He goes to the dustbin and he picks out the little grains of food to give to his children. He's going to the dirty places but only finding the good things. So we should be cultivate that mood and okay, there are faults, but let's overlook them. And if you find faults in others, Krishna will find fault in you. And that's, and he's good at, I mean, he doesn't miss. Not that he wants to find fault in you, he wants to show you what you're like, that's all. So we shouldn't be very eager not to find fault in others. And even when the mind does focus on that, just think of the good qualities, that's all. Or focus on good qualities. It's not important, nor does it make your mind happy, nor does it solve any problems. It just diverts our attention away from proper consciousness, from Krishna consciousness. Practice, that's all. But there's another thing. If you like to find fault or you have a propensity to find fault in yourself. And then that kind of fault finding, you'll get a lot of progress. There's people who cannot stop finding fault. They just look in the mirror, that's all. And you can find some faults that way. So, could you please guide us on how to control lusty desires, which are found to be very difficult compared to others. Well, how to control lusty desires? Srimad Bhagavatam explains that one should work hard. In other words, what is lust anyway? Lust is love diverted towards the material energy, that's all. Lust is not just sex or desire for sex. It's the desire to enjoy the material world. That is lusty desires. It may come in the form of food, it may come in the form of having material possessions, it may come in the form of power, wanting fame, wanting recognition, wanting more of whatever there is available. That's lust. So lust is the adiras, the love for Krishna that is diverted towards him. So use it diverted back towards Krishna by engaging those same desires in Krishna consciousness. That's all. Krishna explains, Arjuna asks the question, what causes a man to act sinful even against his will? One knows something is wrong, but still one is forced to act. Compelled, the word is compelled to act. And Krishna says, Raja Kama Esha Krodha Esha Raja Guna Samudbhava Mahashanap Mahapapam Vidyeha Vihavarinam. He says it is lust in contact with the material mode of passion, which is the all-devouring sinful energy of this world when changed into anger. And then Krishna says, where does that lust sit? It sits in the mind, the intelligence, and in the senses. And there's different degrees of lust. He compares it to as a smoke covering fire, as the dust covering a mirror, as the embryo covering the womb, the different layers of lust covering the living entity. So these are coverings. The living entity is pure. We're covered. These things have nothing to do with us. They're just coverings over our real nature, that's all. Remove their coverings. And Krishna explains how to remove them by transcendental knowledge engaged in devotional service and by regulating the mind and senses. Try to regulate the senses as best as possible. Of course, when we think in terms of how to regulate according to schedule, and schedule is a way to regulate. But even if the schedules are turned upside down by circumstances, one should somehow or other regulate their consciousness by always thinking of Krishna. That's all. Thinking of Krishna more and more. That's all. So lust is like compared in the Bhagavad Gita as like an all-devouring monstrous fire that's engulfing everything in its path. So just change that energy into devotional energy. Serve, that's all, as much as possible. We can serve in different ways. If we have a desire to serve, Krishna will reveal how we can serve. If we have desire. We should have strong desire. How can I serve? That's all. Okay. Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. Hare Krishna. While following devotional service in the family, there are much problems. When only one member is a devotee, for example, cooking prasadam, please guide us on how to overcome this problem. Again, the problem of living in the material world and being surrounded by materialistic activities. Practically speaking, yeah. Well, you just have to make your own arrangements, that's all. Eat only prasadam. If you eat food that is not prasadam, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, you're verily eating only sin. Yagnai shan shastito shanto muchite sarva kilbisa muchite patavagam papam ye pachatmana karana. The devotees of the Lord are free from all sinful activities because they eat food first offered and sacrificed. Those who eat food for sense enjoyment verily eat only sin, Krishna says in Gita. And so, therefore, one should only take prasadam. This is one of the most important principles of Vaishnava culture and practice. So, don't eat unless you eat prasad. And if you have, cook yourself. That's all. You can't be a nice casualty. And so devotees are nice, and sometimes they become a casualty because they don't want to disappoint their family members, or it's too much difficulties. But when it comes to prasadam, that is because the mind becomes very much agitated when we eat food that is not prasad, and therefore it's hard to practice the process of chanting the holy names. If you want the mind to be peaceful, you have to eat only Krishna prasadam. So that's a feature of determination. I will only eat Krishna prasadam. We're preaching in jails in some places in America, and there are devotees there. And, you know, they're fed sometimes food that is not only not prasadam, but it's, you know, it's unmentionable types of food. And some, they won't eat it. They'll just trade it with others to get vegetarian food, and then they'll offer their food as best as they can. So sometimes they fast because they can't get anything good to eat. And so we have to be determined to eat only Krishna prasadam, or food cooked in that manner and offered to the Lord like that. That is a very, very high practice of devotional service. Two things are most important: eating only Krishna prasadam and chanting Hare Krishna in the association of devotees. So don't take it lightly. The pile is supposed to go down. It's getting bigger. How are we doing on time? It's okay. Just let me know when I'm supposed to stop. It is said pure devotional service means always working for the pleasure of Krishna. But earlier, when we had a lot of passion, we worked very hard, efficiently. But to dovetail it for Krishna's pleasure is a little difficult. How to have the passion for Krishna's service? Well, it says by watering the root of the tree, all the branches and trees, all the branches of the tree, the flowers, the fruits, whatever is connected to the root gets the watering process. We are Jivar Sarupaik Nitya Krishna Das. We're eternally connected to Krishna. When we serve Krishna, we're actually serving ourselves, in the sense that by serving the whole, the parts also benefit. So if you really want to do something for yourself, serve Krishna, because you're intimately connected with Krishna. Like a hand that's cut off to the body, from the body, when it's separated from the body, it has no value. When we act independently, we're simply acting in a way that is contrary to our nature. So we have been enthusiastic for activities for our own selfish interest, but we don't know our own interest because we don't know who our self is. The real self is the soul, not the material body. So if you really want to benefit yourself, serve the Lord. Because we serve the Lord for the pleasure of the Lord, and we don't think of our own benefit, but actually that is the highest welfare activity for all living beings, not only oneself, but family members, friends, and society in general. That one wants to do good for oneself and others, engage in devotional service. So by knowledge, we understand that the highest practice of self-interest is devotional service. So take that understanding and become passionate about it. In other words, become enthusiastic. Some of this writing here is a little difficult. Sometimes, Maharaj, we are an association of devotees whom we know very well, that this devotee is philosophically very sound, but still he most of the times talks of materialistic, at least he talks materialistic, and we feel uncomfortable to be with that devotee's association. So Mara, is it offensive to avoid that a devotee's association? Well, it happens sometimes. The devotees are somewhat fixing, but they still talk nonsense. It happens. It's the hardest thing to control. You can do two things. One, if you're intelligent, you can take the conversation and turn it towards Krishna. Or you can be somewhat inattentive. Try not to. Sometimes we speak about other things, but unless it connects itself to devotional service, to Krishna consciousness in some way, it's really prajalpa. And prajalpa just makes the mind tired and loses our enthusiasm for devotional service. So yeah, in that association, we should somehow or other either change it to Krishna consciousness or avoid it somehow. One little trick you might use, we use sometimes, a person is talking some nonsense. It's just like... Prabhupada was talking about Bengali culture. And there was one man who wrote a book who was talking about the beautiful black hair and black eyes of the Bengali women. So Prabhupada was talking about Bengali ladies. And he was writing. And so Prabhupada was talking about this book. And then one devotee said, Krishna has black hair, and he's beautiful. Prabhupada said, this has nothing to do with Krishna. This is all sense gratification. But he said, that's very good. You're thinking about Krishna. That shows you're a devotee. But we're talking nonsense right now. Prabhupada was just talking about something material because it had some connection to some philosophical point that... But Prabhupada commented, it was actually Satsarup Maharaj who said it. Prabhupada commented him, he said, it's nice you're thinking everything in terms of Krishna, this is very nice. But right now we're talking about sense gratification. So that happens at times. But try to remember Krishna and try to somehow or other keep it Krishna conscious. And if you can't, then here's the ultimate question. Dear Maharaj, you can kindly stop now. I will kindly acquiesce. Thank you. Okay, as devotees are moving out to darshans and parikram. Okay, so I'm sorry about not getting to your questions, but as Prabhupada said, if you chant Hare Krishna, all the answers of your questions will automatically be revealed. when you're really chanting Hare Krishna. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol.